Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The Match Ball.
The podcast is brought to you by Levi Solicitors. 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan Moylan. Hello. With me is Michael Normanton.
Hi.
So is Moscow White. Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
27th of January, 1991, and having vanquished Barnsley in a replay back at Elland Road, we thumped them. We now move on to Highbury and Arsenal. And a slight departure from what we normally do here in that we've covered these games before. Over on the extra ball. This is the marathon. Sorry, spoiler alert. I know if you want to be sort of going through this journey in real time, I am going to give you a little bit of a spoiler now. Four games here in this tie. First match and then three replays. We've split it up into two, and we're going to bring you the stuff that we did on the extra ball episode number 43 for our subscribers. But here on this, you know, rather than go back and retread old ground because we've already done it, we will bring you a little sample of that. But first, a word on this tie as a whole.
I mean, in games that went on far too long, it seemed wrong to do more podcasts about them, wouldn't it? Let's just get them out of the way.
And especially how tight these games were. That's one of the themes that we discovered, that these really were two very, very evenly matched teams who effectively sort of cancelled each other out.
Which is a testament to how far we've come. It's only 6 months since this Leeds United team were in Division 2, where they had been for years and years, and it was sort of feel like we would never escape. And with the addition of a couple of ex-Arsenal players, John Lukic and Chris White, plus Gary McAllister, who has never donned an Arsenal shirt and never will, we've got to the point where we can compete with one of the best teams in the country. Absolutely toe-to-toe, nail-to-nail, minute-to-minute, second-to-second.
Hour-to-hour, and probably day-to-day, week-to-week, and year-to-year, such is the nature of this fixture dragging on. And this one then. The first half of episode 43 of The Extra Ball covers off the first game at Highbury, which was on the 27th of January, today, 30 years ago, on the Match Ball 30, and then the replay at home at Elland Road 3 days later on the 30th. Roll the tape. So we want to talk about the Arsenal four-way ding-dong that happened in January 1991. Four FA Cup games. The teams could not be separated. It took four games to do it. Anybody who was there who witnessed this, and I did, will remember just how close this one was. But it's worth giving some wider context to this. So where were Arsenal at this time? Where were we at this time?
Why did we keep playing them? It's the first thing that needs addressing.
Well,
because
it did kill off the cup replay, didn't it?
Because I don't really remember this. I'd have been six or seven when this was going on, so I have no memory of this happening at the time. And I can vaguely remember them getting rid of FA Cup replays for semi-finals, but this got rid of it before then. But before this point, they used to just play forever until someone won, including extra time. So you'd just constantly have to go to the other team's ground, just swapping back and forth one way then the other until you finally get a winner.
It took priority as well. So league matches and other matches had to be bumped out of the way to get this FA Cup match finished because it was considered the most important fixture. And so, yeah, it caused, and as we'll see in a bit, to be fair to the replay system, this was rare. It wasn't often you had games dragging on for a month trying to get a winner and causing this much chaos. But it did cause us some problems.
So 1991, they're in the process of dismantling the Berlin Wall. And this took place, funnily enough, the sequence of fixtures, it almost perfectly bookended Operation Desert Storm, which was the second operation that brought the conclusion of the first Gulf War.
I was at home ill during Operation Desert Storm. I've just remembered. I'd not.
You weren't on the front lines?
I pulled a Trump and said I had a bone injury in my foot. No, I can't remember what I'd done, but I remember lying on the couch at home watching the Gulf War on telly.
Great days.
Got a second series as well, didn't it? It's good.
It did get a second series. Well, yeah, Operation Desert Storm. It started 10 days before the first game and then ended 12 days after the fourth and final match, which was interesting.
So not only did the match bring a resolution to the FA Cup fourth round, but to all the problems in the Middle East.
But English clubs had only just returned to European competition after the post-Heysel ban this year as well. That's forgotten that we spent some time out of Europe. Liverpool would have been in the European Cup, but they were given an extra year's ban due to the Heysel Stadium disaster. So we had no English team in the European Cup. However, Villa competed in the UEFA Cup and they went out in the second round 3-2 against Inter Milan. And Man United were our representatives in the Cup Winners' Cup and apparently beat Barcelona in Feyenoord or something like that.
You say our representatives? Do you feel like they were your representative?
Not me personally.
No.
I mean, in the royal sense.
I do remember actually Mark Hughes scored an annoyingly good winning goal in that game. Yeah. It's one of my earliest kind of, because I was about 10 at this point, so one of my earliest kind of soccer memories is him pinging it in.
Bastard. There's no point bemoaning the lack of European football either, because there was the Zenith Data Systems Cup, which was just as good as any European competition.
That's exactly why it was introduced, was to make up for the fact that we didn't have any European competitions, so give us the ZDS.
In and around this sequence, we played Derby at home. And that's what's forgotten about this sequence, is there was loads and loads of cup games as well. Zenith Data Systems, we were making our way to the League Cup semi-final. These FA Cup games, which we'll kind of touch on as we go through the timeline of this, but some major disruption, but like 6,000 fans were at home for the Zenith Data Systems game against Derby County, which we won 2-1 on the 22nd of January, which was just before we played the first of these games. At this time, I mean, Arsenal were absolutely formidable. It is worth saying that this is a season in which they only lost one game. And they spent 4 months of it without Tony Adams, because you remember he was imprisoned for drink driving.
Yeah, it's funny. When George Graham has that reputation because of the way he managed Leeds during the goalless season, as being that strict disciplinarian who stands no nonsense and, you know, would sort players out. The Arsenal team of this era is absolute chaos. So Tony Adams is in jail. Paul Merson is a drugs, gambling and cocaine addict. David Hillier made one of his first appearances in the matches against us, failed a drugs test for cannabis a few years later, then stole a briefcase belonging to a Danish businessman.
Sounds like a Bond plot gone wrong, doesn't it?
Having read about this, it wasn't really a theft. He did it for a laugh, I think, was the gist of it. Someone had left different times, obviously. A Danish businessman went to get his car from the car park at the airport, just left his £3,000 worth of computer equipment and stuff at a bus stop. And David Hillier was coming back from holiday with someone, Wayne Burnett, he was called, the guy, played for Bolton, they must have been mates, and they just thought it'd be a laugh to take it. But you're not allowed to do it, apparently. You can't just pick up stuff and take it.
Comedy thieving.
If it doesn't belong to you.
So you had all that, and then they had the brawl versus Manchester United, where I think Nigel Winterburn was in the thick of starting all that.
They got deducted 2 points for that, didn't they? And they still won the league by 6.
Paul Davies broke a man's jaw as well in 1988. He punched Glenn Cockerill and got a 9-game ban for that. So
absolute lawless, but also the one law they did respect was the offside law, because this was the famous back four that would just step forward, arm in the air, offside. And it's interesting, in the first match, so this is 1991, you can hear the Leeds fans singing "Boring, Boring Arsenal." I'd not realised it actually went that far back. They were a brilliant team, but a miserable team.
Yeah, they were very good, which is, you know, it's a real testament to how good our Leeds team was, that this was the first season back after having got promoted. And we went toe-to-toe with this brilliant, mature side. Well, you know, Lee Chapman finished as the second highest scorer in the league after Alan Smith, funnily enough, who got 22. Chapman got 21. So we hit the ground running.
Chapman was highest scorer, highest first division scorer overall. I think got 31 or 32 that season, helped by the fact that we went hell for leather in all the cuts. We did go full Leeds, because the Revy team that got promoted from the second division in 64 then only lost the league title on goal average to Scum the next season. And then the whole thing of getting embroiled in going really far in every cup going, because it wasn't only the ZDS Cup that we nearly won, we were in the League Cup semi-final against Scum. We've got these 4 FA Cup matches, and we were outside bets we were third and trying to win the title.
So we went into this game then, having faced Barnsley in the third round. We drew 1-1 at Oakwell and then brought them back to ours and absolutely trounced them. Was it 4-0?
Yeah, I love Howard Wilkinson's preview of this match. Howard Wilkinson's really good when we read back through some of the things he he said we'd been beaten by Liverpool, and he was asked if a match against Barnsley from the lower division would be a good way to recover. And he said, from a professional point of view, it's an awful draw. We're away from home against a good team and a good manager and on a small ground. It's a good job we're optimists.
Good old Wilco. The glass very much half empty. And then
on the plus side, we'll all be dead soon.
Well, they came into this game then having beaten Sunderland, which looked like a fairly routine 2-1 win at Highbury in the round before that. So yeah, game number one took place at Highbury. And I remember, like you, Moscow, watching this one on TV and just marvelling at how tight the entire thing was.
Well, for me, it was a rare chance to actually see Leeds play. This must have been one of the first few matches I watched, because the first time I actually saw Leeds play a proper live game on the television was the Man City match at the start of the season, where we beat them 3-2 at Main Road. And we weren't on TV that many more times, because you only had one game a week. One first division match every week on a Sunday afternoon. And then this was the occasional treat of the BBC showing an FA Cup match.
Isn't it funny to think I'm just looking down the list of results here, and we were something of a cup side going into this, because we'd beaten Villa 4-1 in the League Cup quarter final to get through to the semi-finals. And that happened, I'm just looking at the date of this, 16th of January. And then we faced Arsenal on the 27th of January. So we were just embedded in the cups at this time.
And do you want to know an interesting bit of trivia about that League Cup match against Aston Villa? It's when Howard Wilkinson used Mick Whitlow as a man marker on Tony Daly, and was so pleased with the job he did that it inspired him to put Chris Fairclough as man marker on Tony Daly in the next season when we went to Villa Park in the game when we beat them 4-1 again, the famous one in the titles. And so the foundations laid by Mick Whitlow for that one.
Marcelo Bielsa saw the man-to-man job that he did twice over those two games, because he would have seen them because he watched everything. And then he thought, I'm going to go man-for-man all over the pitch. That's what I'm going
to
do.
He probably was weighing up a bid for Whitlow to take him to Newell's Old Boys at the time.
But yeah, so we defeated Villa, and then we had the derby in the ZDS Cup in front of 6,500 fans on the 22nd of January. Because there was a complaint at that time, don't forget, that there were so many games to go to, and it was costing a fair bit.
Yeah, there's an interesting detail in the midst of all that, that they were worrying about whether fans could actually afford to go to all these games, so cut the ticket prices for the ZDS Cup. And I think maybe the making it up the later rounds, the later replays against Arsenal, but certainly there was a genuine worry that we were making money from ticket income and broadcasting income that we didn't expect, but at the same time we're actually thinking our fans might actually run out of cash, because constantly putting on unexpected games was not part of the plan.
So they were top of the league by a point, although Liverpool did have a game in hand at this stage, and we'd lost to Liverpool actually. Turn of the year, New Year's Day, we'd lost 3-0.
They battered us.
Yeah, not a good day, that one. But again, you're thinking, oh, maybe the cups are where we're going to do it. But this side, this Arsenal side, was great. And I can remember being terrified by Anders Limpar in that first match. He was such a quality player.
Yeah, I used to like, I always kind of hoped he'd come to Leeds, but it never really took off. Their team, it's not very different from the team they had that ended the decade with Arsene Wenger. You've got Seaman in goal, Lee Dixon, Steve Bold, David O'Leary. He didn't last, but Nigel Winterburn, Paul Davis, Anders Limpar, Paul Merson, Michael Thomas, Perry Groves, Alan Smith. Those all feel like just household names to me. And it's crazy that Kevin Campbell at that time was like the young, up-and-coming starlet striker who was on the bench. And David Hillier, also, who I remember becoming, he was key in when Arsenal played Sheffield Wednesday all those times in the cup matches, was key. Looking like a child. You think Ben White looks young. David Hillier looks ridiculously out of his depth in these matches.
I'd never really seen peak Anders Limpar before, because by the time I got into football, I think he was at Everton and he was all right. He was still fairly skillful, but he was a bit slower. He's amazing in these games. Yeah. All of them. He stands out a mile in these. And Batty is just kicking him all over the place, which is funny as well. And at one point, he tries kicking Batty back. Because every time Batty kicks him, he gets massively annoyed by it. But when Batty gets kicked, he's never asked, is he? He
just sort of wiped his nose on his sleeve.
He just does a sort of a look of like, all right, fine. Yeah, that's what the game's about. Absolutely fine. But Limpar's getting increasingly annoyed at him through these games, which is lovely.
And there were some real, what you would imagine in your mind to be our second division players, but that did a great job in that first season of going back up. Like Peter Haddock was in the back four this day. Carl Schutt was still playing for us at this stage. You know, we were just started, we had McAllister at this point.
The only players we brought in were John Lukic, who we'd bought from Arsenal because he was replaced by David Seaman, Chris White and Gary McAllister. Everyone else had...
There's no Dorigo at this, stage, is there?
Well, we had McWhitlow, so we didn't really need him. I think he was injured at this point, so Haddock got the nod at left-back. But this was actually the season when the left-back position was absolutely cursed. Snowden, Kamara, Haddock and Whitlow all played there and all had really bad injuries at different points during the season. I think if you've seen Mickey Whitlow's goal on Boxing Day against Chelsea where he bangs it in from 60 yards, it was his first game back after surgery for a bleed on the brain. So everything like, and yeah, this season later on Haddock's career finished because of an injury. Not the one at Sunderland where Howard Wilkinson said it looked like his leg had been had gone through a tractor. But I think it's the League Cup game against Scum when, he never recovered from a knee injury in that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's interesting in this game is that had they had VAR back then, we'd have probably gone out and avoided all this because they should have scored.
Well, it's a tricky one because, yes, it's Paul Davis running through onto a looping ball into the six-yard box and he gets there, heads it over Lukic and into the net and he's flagged offside and he's about 10 yards
on. It's like
on.
Three players playing him on.
Absolutely ridiculous. But the other thing that the replay shows is that... because back then, the flag goes up instantly as well. So Lukic and McAllister, who were the ones furthest back, saw the flag go up and they just stopped. So Lukic didn't even really try to get the ball that went over him and McAllister let him run on and head it. So you couldn't really argue that it should have stood.
That was a one way to kind of enable getting the offside, wasn't it? It was a very deliberate tactic almost. If you stopped,
yeah,
it was kind of to force the issue, wasn't it? Because it was very rare that you get an overrule in those days, or like now where the linesman will just basically keep flag down and then they'll let VAR sort it out.
And there was a bit of conversation about it in the press afterwards. Obviously, Arsenal were a bit annoyed. But what was quite refreshing on the commentary, it's John Motson and Trevor Brooking. They don't seem that arsed. They just kind of go, oh, well, actually, the replay shows that that was onside. Oh, well.
I'm with the game.
Not an hour of analysis in the Sky studio afterwards with Gary Neville going crazy.
I don't want to be too harsh on the referee in this game either because he was only 8 years old.
It's tiny, isn't it?
I've taken a still of him. At one point, John Lukic is complaining the ball isn't inflated enough, so the referee takes it off him to have a little squeeze. And if the top of his head might just about be level with Lukic's nipples, I'd say. Is that sort of a height difference? And he's got these... He looks like one of the crankies. The little one, specifically.
The sexy one.
But yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, just double checking, yeah.
Speaking of the honesty of Motson, actually, he says, we have to be honest here, Trevor, after 32 minutes, I don't think it's that exciting for you.
One thing I did take from it was the commentary. I was really quite refreshingly pleased. I put myself back into if I was watching it at 10, how much I probably learnt from watching this game. Because all John Motson and Trevor Brooking do is talk about the match. They sort of say, oh, and Arsenal's Anders Limpar, well, he's playing on the wing, so that's putting him up against, it'll be the up to the right back of Leeds United to sort him out. And then Trevor Brooking might say, well, I think they've moved David Batty back there to get on him and talk about where the players are. But then when I listen to, I mean, I bang on about this all the time, but Jonathan Pearce now, whenever he's commentating, he's like, and we remember him playing in the Toulon tournament of 2016 when he scored, and there's like paying absolutely no attention to what's happening on the pitch, but just hearing Motson saying McAllister to Batty, it's gone wide to Speed, he can cross from here, Chapman will be looking for the header, and it's like, oh yeah, you're explaining what's happening to me. So I did quite enjoy just having a football match explained to me by commentators.
Nice to see Highbury in its pomp as well. You forget how much you miss these old stadiums. Now everyone's in these mega bowls and Arsenal are in the Emirates.
It's such a nice ground is Highbury. Even the camera angle brings back a nice nostalgic feel. I know it's, I think even if you took the stands away, I feel like I'd be able to tell just from the positioning of the camera that it's Arsenal. I can still picture Thierry Henry sprinting past Michael Dewberry on that same pitch years later. But it's great the way the stand opposite the camera has got like a daft little bottom tier. Then there's a scoreboard's off centre on it. There's this, I don't actually even remember this, but at one point it cuts to the substitutes. This must have been removed in later years. But they're in like a greenhouse. There's Kevin Campbell in it and David Hillier, who, as you say, looks like a child, and Stuart Houston. And in fact, it's not even a greenhouse. It's posher than a greenhouse. I'd say it's like an orangery or something.
But a really tiny one.
That they've had built. And it looks weirdly like they're around their nan's house or something. And all just huddled at the side of the pitch.
And glorious things like the clock end as well. And, you know, just to see that unique stand rather than these uniform bowls.
The clock end is a weird thing. I don't know quite the development of it, but it looks like a normal stand that they've then decided to put some corporate hospitality in it, but they've done it by putting a cricket pavilion on top of some big concrete posts and just having it at the back of the stand. But it's great. I think when you look at the Emirates now, you can't really tell what side of it you're on, can you? The whole thing's the same inside and outside, and it's just boring. Whereas it's got a real character to it.
As they should be as well. I mean, I went to see one of my mates who lived close to that stadium, and we went to the Arsenal tube station, and you go past Highbury, which is now the flats, and I kind of had a pang of nostalgia when I saw that. All the gardens and stuff in the middle, but the stands are still there, and you think, oh yeah, it's seen so much history, and yet there it is now, just another set of boxy flats.
Really narrow tunnel as well. I'm not sure if it's this game or footage of one of the later games, but the tunnel's basically like the width of someone's front door. And all the players have to run out through it. It's,
one at a time, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. It's great.
I think this,
if we ever redevelop Elland Road, we should make it deliberately shit in certain places.
Make it worse.
Yeah.
I think this concentration on the commentary and the staging does kind of indicate that this isn't the most scintillating nightmares. We did have a problem. Carl Short was in really good form in this season, but went off with a hamstring injury in the first half. And his replacement was John Pearson, who... If you've
big
never
man,
seen
big man combo up front.
Yeah, if you're familiar with Lee Chapman, then you can get the concept of John Pearson, because if you just imagine him, Lee Chapman, but worse. Similar physique, but not good at any of the things that Lee Chapman's good at.
It's a great description. I mean, that was, what was it? That was Sunday the 27th of January, and then we got the replay on the Wednesday the 30th, so just a few days apart.
David Seaman does make a very good save from Gary McAllister.
Yes, he does.
Late in the game. That's more or less, is it about the last minute of the game, that? Where he tips a shot from him over the bar?
Yeah.
That's about as close as we come, though.
Yeah, and so to the replay, and it was one apiece at Elland Road on the Wednesday. Two goals that were very, very close together. And again, it was Limpar who was the threat. And again, I went to this game and I remember just thinking how terrifying Limpar looked.
Not as big a danger man as Christopher White.
Yeah, and former Arsenal man, of course.
There was not only the goal he had disallowed in this one. I think this is, I said when we started getting into that we were going to talk about this game, that I had some match footage saved from when I did Do You Want to Win, but that I had absolutely no clue which clip related to which match. And maybe now you've seen, I tried to arrange them into a folder, you might have seen what I was dealing with. So I can't remember if it's this game or the other one when Chris White kind of juggles the ball from one foot to the other and then volleys just past the post. It might be the next one. Anyway, this one, he has a very good finish from a corner, disallowed because it went through Chapman's legs and Chapman was offside.
With modern rules, would that be offside? Because he doesn't really block the keeper, does he? It's kind of at the side of David Seaman.
I'm going to say yes, and that we were cheated yet again.
Okay. But then we do take the lead, because Chapman scores a header, which features a David Seaman doing, I would describe it as a Bailey Peacock Farrell dive.
Yeah, it's a really good, it's a a big Stirling cross, isn't it? And it's a great Chapman header. If you want an example of what Chapman was really good at, just leaping and directing a strong header down inside the post, and it hits the post and goes in, and that's the point when David Seaman decides to dive. And I'm sure John Lukic must have been at the other end going, yeah, you got what you wanted, George Graham.
I mean, I can remember being in Elland Road, and again, just to reiterate the theme that I mentioned earlier, it was so, so tight and up for grabs at this one as well. We knew that whoever won would be facing a trip to Shrewsbury Town, who were in the third division at this stage, which is, that would be third tier proper at that point, wasn't it, pre-Premier League?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there's a big, you could arrogantly consider that a bye through to the quarterfinal after that. So you're really getting, you practically won the cup at that stage. So we're a goal up and everything's looking good. But unfortunately, we only held it for 2 minutes because of the aforementioned Swede.
He does he just sort of slaloms through, is how I'd describe that. White and Fairclough, neither of them can really track where he is because he keeps changing direction, the tricky sod.
There's a little bit of a hint of the Bielsa-ness in this because Stirling has been attacking and is nowhere to be seen. Strachan is chasing him back and Strachan sort of goes as far as he can and then he sort of sees Limpar getting away with him. He could just kind of just goes to a jog and just shrugs. He's looking at Fairclough and White, just going, lads, I'm not going to get anywhere
near Bail me out.
Yep, do your best. And they can't. He turns... He goes past them both and shoots. I feel like I've seen goals like that go past Lukic quite a lot. We forgot to mention in the first match that whose header is it that Lukic puts over? Is it from Alan Smith?
I think it's Perry Groves.
Right. And was it a header or a shot?
I know the save you mean.
There's a really good... the ball is...
It's a shot that either comes off his foot or his head.
And it's fired. It's just going under the crossbar. And Lukic switches direction and he does this kind of sweeping movement with his arm to tip it over the bar. And Bob Wilson is in the studio at halftime. He was obviously the famous Arsenal goalkeeper and was a goalkeeper coach. While he talks, I can remember getting this from other sources as well. He talks about how before a game, John Lukic just used to switch off. He wouldn't talk to anybody for an hour. And I read later that he used to spend it kind of meditating in a bath. Everybody else is getting ready. I think David Batty's pre-match routine was a Mars bar and a can of Coke. He'd turn up at 5 to 3 and just go out and play. But everybody else would be, doing whatever routines. But he just used to kind of go into this this trance alone in a still bath.
The madness.
I don't know if he had any tea lights around him or what. But then would go out and pull off brilliant saves like that.
Nice to see Glyn Snoddin making an appearance in extra time in this game with his mullet, a superb haircut.
It looks absolutely magnificent. When people say, do we miss the tallest floodlights in Europe, the way that they light up his mullet as it goes flapping flapping behind him as he runs across the pitch, it's a wonder.
And Lee Chapman's throwing.
Yeah, I think Seaman's run out to the corner to try and stop a ball going out for a corner. It's left to Lee Chapman to take a throw-in.
Is he trying to take a quick one?
Yeah. You've never seen a man throw a ball in such an uncomfortable way. You forget throwing is kind of a specialist position on the pitch, don't you? Mm. It's basically the job of the fullback to take it. I don't know how Chapman really gets away with it, but it just looks wrong. It looks like a giraffe trying to take a throw-in or something. The whole thing is uncomfortable viewing.
It's always surprising when you watch games from this era and you see Lee Chapman doing things that you sort of don't expect. Because there's a few big passes. Like one of his jobs was to win a header, and if the second ball lands at his feet, he would pass it out to the wings. So there's these big looping kind of crossfield passes to the feet of Strachan or Stirling. And you're thinking, Lee Chapman? And there's a couple of occasions in these four games when he crosses. And it's like, why is Lee Chapman crossing?
It's like the universe is on its head.
I feel like history hasn't been kind to Lee Chapman. He's very good. He's very effective. Every time we've watched stuff from this era, you always come away, like the Sheffield Wednesday game we watched, you think, bloody hell, it's actually really good.
I think what you find is that because he wasn't very graceful, that's how he's remembered. You kind of remember he's almost as there's a degree of physical comedy about how he played, but actually his awareness was superb, wasn't it?
I would say this as well about Chris White. He has the reputation that it was Chris Fairclough was the skillful one who would bring the ball out. And Chris White, because he had long, gangly legs and because his hair was falling out, he just looked gangly and weird on the pitch. But actually, There's a goal he scored pre-season at Scarborough where he dribbles around four people and put it in. And then this chance where he kind of juggled the ball and volleyed it just wide is good skill. And he played the mid-80s in North American indoor football, playing six-a-side. And you've got to be able to... That's all about close control and speed and passing and skill. And he kind of gets underrated as well. Probably got a slightly better touch than Chappie.
And you didn't get the sense that Wilco was particularly overly enamoured by the idea of going to a third match, but a third match it was.
Worth saying this went to extra time as well. At this point, we're into playing extra time, but without penalties. So that's really not very satisfying, is it, to play an extra half hour for no reason?
Yeah, Wilkinson, I like his wry take on how the two teams were playing against each other, because what they basically come with, and George Graham said, the two sides are very evenly matched. And we were, and I think not just ability, because I think it's fair to say that Arsenal running away with the league were a better team than we were at the time, but just the styles seemed to be, we could cope with Arsenal and Arsenal could cope with us. And Wilkinson said, in situations like these, there can be a danger in trying to get too clever. By any standards, the players in these sides are not bad players and they're doing their very best and giving of their very best. And frankly, I cannot see any easy solution to it. So he's kind of saying he's not going to, you know, go out there in inverting his Christmas tree formation and some, you know, playing David Batty in a hole behind the strikers. Saying, no, we're just going to have two teams of 4-4-2 against each other for weeks until it gets sorted, because, you know, there can be a danger in trying to get too clever.
And there was the issue here of fixtures piling up and us not quite being sure who we were going to play from one week to the next because of the cup replays throwing everything into the area, into the air. That we had the League Cup semi-final was not too long after this, but prior to that we had to go to Spurs as well, and that was significant for Lee Chapman's injury. That was when he went face first on the gravel and tore open all his face.
Yeah, we already had this problem of so the way that the fixtures were being sorted out was that on the Wednesday before we were due to play on the weekend, we didn't actually know who we would be playing. We could be playing Shrewsbury in the cup, we could be playing Arsenal for another replay, or Derby County in the league. So we had 9 confirmed fixtures to play in 7 weeks, but there were another 11 possible fixtures that could or couldn't happen. And then thrown into this, we went to Tottenham, and Lee Chapman just slid. He got kicked in the face by accident, to be fair, to see Steve Sedgley, and slid, was rendered unconscious in midair and landed on his face, and he was 14 stone. So the results were... horrific, actually.
It required plastic surgery, didn't it?
Yeah, and so he played on. Obviously, we're dealing with the Arsenal game mostly, but the short version is that after he had the plastic surgery, a week later, he got in touch with somebody who was an expert on boxing, rubbed some plastic skin, they called it, on his face and a bit of Vaseline, and went out to play against Scum in a League Cup semi-final with 30 stitches holding his face together. Proper player.
Irresponsible, but still, well done.
The Match Ball.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.